This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a new report on the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis and what it shows about the community's experience living here. We'll talk to a live panel of experts and advocates behind the report about what impact they hope it has. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we will do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. We would love to hear from you this hour. Joining me on Skype are four guests. Chris Hanberg is Executive Director of Indy Pride. Welcome, Chris.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me here today.
Thanks, Chris. And Julie Walsh is Founder and Executive Director of Gender Nexus. Julie, welcome.
Hey, friends.
Dustin Nowoski is Founder and President of OutCare. Hi, Dustin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Chris Paulson is with us. He's CEO. She is CEO of Indiana Youth Group. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having us.
Chris Hanberg, we'll start with you. What was the goal of the survey itself? What did you want to find out?
I think that we wanted to find out what was going on in our community, needs existed in the community. A lot of us get together and talk often and talk about the needs in the community, but it was a lot of anecdotal evidence based on our own experiences and our conversations within the community. So to have this data point, to have this study, was really important that we can shape and find direction for organizations in the future.
And so how did the survey happen? As I understand it, it was a group effort?
Yes, it was a group effort. The Damien Center pulled together a lot of the LGBTQ organizations. We met several times to discuss what we perceive the needs to be and what type of questions to ask. And then we used some consultants to guide the process.
Chris Paulson, have there been many reports about the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis or Indiana like this one?
There aren't official reports. As Chris Hanberg said, we all have anecdotal stories, but we really hadn't had the data to back up those stories. So this is a first on this scale for Indianapolis. In the past, I think we've all quoted a lot of national data, but it's great to know what's happening locally rather than just nationally.
And why do you think this hasn't been looked at enough?
I think some of it is just the atmosphere of Indiana. You know, LGBTQ issues haven't always been to the front. And in the past, some of our groups have not done a great job of working together. And I think in the past 2 or 3 years, we've broken down silos and we're really working together to better our LGBTQ community.
And when you saw what the report said, did any of it surprise you at all?
I don't think personally I was surprised by anything, but you know, those of us who work in this community all the time know what happens. I think the community, the Indianapolis community in general, will probably be surprised by some of the data.
Can you point to what might be surprising to the general public that wasn't necessarily surprising to you? Anything that stands out?
Well, Indiana Youth Group works with youth, so we know that youth face issues of homelessness, housing insecurity, and food insecurity a lot. One in four youth is thrown out in Indiana when they come out. So we know that that's happening. And this data shows that it's happening not just with youth, but with the community in general, especially trans people and trans people of color in particular are really facing some very, very serious issues.
Chris Hanberg, what about you? Was anything that came out in the report surprising to you?
I think the most surprising part of the report was that 91% of the people responded positively wanting an LGBTQ center in town, a central place where resources could be gathered, a place where they could find and meet members of their community, that was not at a bar, that was not focused on, you know, picking up or hooking up or alcohol, but really wanted to find meaningful connections and that 91% of the people that responded to the survey indicated that they wanted that, I didn't expect the number to be that high. And so I was very excited, encouraged, but also, hoping that we can pull together our resources and build.
And we'll talk about what that community center could look like in a number of ways later in the hour. But Dustin, let's bring you into the conversation. Can you take us into the data that we got from this and talk about some of the interesting things that you found while looking at it?
Yeah, so again, some of us have already mentioned, this survey was very comprehensive. We asked a lot of different survey items about mental health, physical health, housing stability, food security, things like that. I think there were over 100 questions as part of this survey. It's a very lengthy, very comprehensive survey. So it's amazing that we were able to get near 700 full data participants. That's a lot when we're looking at survey data like this. Kind of similar to what Chris said, it's very interesting to me that 91% identified that they want a center, yet only 38% of participants felt connected to the LGBTQ community. So we do have a contrast there, right? A lot of people are saying that they want a center, they want to be integrated, connected with the LGBTQ community, but right now, currently, very few of them actually feel connected. As a provider and as someone within the community myself, I see this all the time. I think that a lot of populations, cisgender, heterosexual populations included, there's this misperception that LGBTQ people don't need resources because they, quote, have their own community. But what we do know is that a lot of people within the community don't feel connected to the general population, but also the LGBTQ community itself.
Today, we're talking about a new report on the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis and what it shows about the community's experience living here. And we are talking to Dustin Nowoski, founder and president of OutCare. We also have Julie Walsh with us, founder and executive director of Gender Nexus. Chris Hanberg is executive director of Indy Pride, and Chris Paulson is CEO of Indiana Youth Group. Dustin, what are some different ways to help with connection to the community other than the aforementioned bars, which not everyone can go to?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We can talk a little bit about why that's problematic in a number of different ways. But to feel connected to the community, there's a lot of things that we can do. So at the provider level, obviously, we can connect people with appropriate healthcare and a part of different social groups, things like that, support groups. Like Chris was mentioning earlier, you know, there are a lot of LGBTQ organizations across Indiana. A lot of them focus in Indianapolis. Like Chris mentioned, historically, some of us were doing great things, yet we weren't communicating with one another. A lot of resources were overlapping and replicated. I think that we're steadfast and we're on this journey now that we are building off of each other's resources and providing services here and there that the other organizations aren't. Reaching out to those organizations is a great way to feel connected to the community outside of the bars. It's a great way to meet very diverse people within the LGBTQ community. And it's a great way to hear their stories, their coming out stories, the struggles that they've had and how they are either currently still experiencing them or how they've overcome them. It can be very, very powerful for the LGBTQ community to hear those stories.
I mean, I keep hearing building community as an issue that needs to be resolved. But was there another particular issue or a need from the community that also kept coming up? Well, I guess what's the most common problem people are facing, Dustin?
Yeah, I would say it's a very generalized thing to say, but struggle. So a lot of our questions focused on struggle. And what we saw was, by and large, most people had experience some or all of the struggles in some capacity. So when we're talking about struggle, we're talking about things like food and housing security. We're talking about being able to afford going to the doctor, afford medications. A lot of research has shown and what our data shows is that a lot of people don't feel comfortable going to healthcare providers in general. This is often related to discrimination and victimization that they feel even before they see the doctor, often at the front desk. These are disparities that while they are complex, they are overlapping, and we want to tackle them all at once.
Dustin, can we talk about the demographics of those surveyed within the report by age, race, identity, things like that? What does it look like?
Yeah. So we have a widespread of demographics, actually. So about 72% of our participants live in Marion County. The other remaining 28% are around surrounding counties of Marion. Most of our participants identified as adults, middle age, between 25 and 44. Most identified as Caucasian, although we did have good representation from other minority groups. A lot of our participants identified as transgender, non-binary, genderqueer. We have a lot of participants identifying exclusively gay, exclusively lesbian, exclusively bisexual, and exclusively queer. Some of our participants indicated that they had experienced homelessness at some point in their life. Some of them had indicated that they experienced foster care at some point in their life. And a high percentage of them, identified as someone with a disability.
Are there any gaps, though, in the representation? Any gaps where you weren't when you maybe weren't able to get enough information from a particular community? Is anything missing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I will say that data like this, it is extremely hard to hit all of the minority groups, no matter how large those minority groups or small they are. So while we do have participants that identified as non-Caucasian across many different races, we had a lot of participants identify as transgender, non-binary. Those are small numbers compared to those that identified as Caucasian and exclusively LGB. So we do want to follow this survey up in a couple of months, and we want to reach out to those groups and see if we can collect more data. This is a very common problem when you look at state data, national data. Getting surveys from subpopulations of the LGBTQ community and minority groups, especially transgender people of color, we just don't have enough data out there. It's very unfortunate. And what we do know is that, unfortunately, these are the people that have the more struggles.
We'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about a new report on the LGBTQ plus community. And if you have questions or comments for the show, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail. 866-476-3881 is the number to call. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back with more in the conversation in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the results of a new report on the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis, and we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. And we would especially love to hear from you this hour if you are a member of the LGBTQ plus community. Again, Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're joined again via Skype by four guests. Chris Hanberg is Executive Director of Indie Pride. Julie Walsh is Founder and Executive Director of Gender Nexus. Dustin Nowoski is Founder and President of OutCare. And Chris Paulson is CEO of Indiana Youth Group. Julie, we will start this segment with you. What stands out to you when you look at this report?
Thanks. When I look at this report, we really have some heartbreaking results that are here, and they really do demand action by being able to create a safe, unified space for organizations that do serve LGBTQ plus communities to take up residence and to collaboratively offer services in a culturally competent way. For the communities that we serve at Gender Nexus, we're really working with people who are transgender and non-binary. And this data is showing that 44% of folks are struggling to find enough to eat. We have over a quarter of folks who are really struggling to find a job, and this was before our pandemic hit. So we know that those numbers are even greater. And we also know from our experience in working with these communities that they are at risk of being hired and fired at fired at greater rates and hired at lower rates. Hopefully the Supreme Court ruling that recently happened last week will help to deter some of that that has happened historically. But really, when over a quarter of folks are struggling to find a job and those rates will grow even higher with the post-pandemic numbers, we have a lot of community members who are struggling with poverty and the isolation that comes with all of those things.
Julie, you're the founder and executive director of Gender Nexus. You just said that you work with transgender and non-binary people, but can you explain, I guess, in a basic way, what Gender Nexus is and what Gender Nexus does?
Sure. What we do is we're really committed to the pursuit of gender equity and gender justice by ensuring that transgender and non-binary people can successfully navigate those services and systems that have proven to be barriers for them. We offer programs and services where people can really connect with one another to address the issues that are really relevant to them, particularly in helping with the mental health support. It's an issue throughout the entire survey that was a primary need that was identified by LGBTQ folks in general, was that need for access to competent mental health counseling. And that's particularly true for the people that we work with here.
What are some specific needs that transgender and non-binary Hoosiers have? I guess those groups specifically, which may or may not, I guess, have been reflected in the report. What are some of those needs?
Some of those needs are access to providers who really understand their unique needs that they have, not only medically, but also their social needs and the way that they can be supported, but also the needs that exist for supporting their family members through their affirmation process. So, for example, when we're working with youth and families through the Adolescent Gender Health Clinic, we're helping families to support their youth as they affirm themselves safely within schools, that they're connecting with folks at IYG to have that support and that connection, that we can help them in their legal name and gender marker change without issues that they might otherwise experience. It can be a very intimidating and overwhelming process. And what we want to do, not just as Gender Nexus, but really as an LGBTQ plus organization whole, is to help folks and to work hand in hand, where each of us have created these services and programs to make people's journeys as smooth as possible.
You mentioned mental health needs. What is a common mental health need of that community? The word that struck me as you said it was affirmation, the affirmation journey. Is that part of it, or are there other issues that come up more common than that, I suppose?
It is a big part of the process of understanding oneself and trying to go through the journey as other people learn to support who they are. So some of that is based around supporting folks who have experienced bullying and who have experienced harassment. The survey shows that almost two-thirds of folks have experienced harassment or have been threatened or attacked. Those folks are, those numbers are even higher for trans women of color who are experiencing violence at highly disproportionate rates. And to process through that trauma together in a safe space is really important.
Dustin, I want to come back to a little more on the survey. It looks like there's a pretty tiny portion of the survey's participants that were under the age of 18. Did you try to reach younger people and have a difficult time doing so? Or was this geared toward adults?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think maybe Chris can jump in here and explain why we don't have as many. We obviously distributed it through OutCare and the other organizations. A part of our bigger group disseminated the survey amongst, you know, our outlets. I will say that majority of our viewership online is the adult population, although we do have adolescents between 16 and 18 that are looking for providers and resources, absolutely. It is something that we want to target and survey more in our next survey.
And are you talking about Chris Hanberg could follow up on that?
Yeah, Chris Paulson. Yeah.
Chris Paulson. Chris,
yeah.
What's your follow-up?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in. Indiana Youth Group serves youth ages 12 to 20, and we did pass out the survey to our youth that use our services. But our youth have a safe space right now. You know, they feel safe at IYG, and we work with other organizations to provide them the services they need. What we're really worried about as an organization is when our youth age out at age 21, we don't want them aging into the bars. We want them to be able to continue getting the critical life-saving services that they receive at IYG. You know, just because they become 21 doesn't mean that they don't still need the support. So that's what the community service, the community center will give them, is the services that they're used to at IYG. They can continue those as they become young adults.
Dustin, along those lines, why is it hard to reach some minority groups?
It's a very good question. I would say that question has a lot of answers. So I would say one that sticks out is a lack of resources. So we, unfortunately, a lot of our minority groups don't have things like a computer, right? So this was an online survey. It obviously didn't reach those communities. We also know that communities, especially the minority communities within the LGBTQ population, they're working longer days. They have longer hours, right? Being able to devote the time to a survey, unfortunately, just isn't in their time schedule. And so these are some reasons why. Obviously, there are a lot more. Some people, again, it's a long survey. They start it and then they say, I can't finish this. This is too long. And then we also have some people that don't feel connected to the LGBTQ community, and they unfortunately don't see a need for the center themselves. And so they won't complete the survey based on that. There's a lot of overlapping, but also a lot of different attitudes that goes into completing a survey.
We're talking with Dustin Nowoski, founder and president of OutCare. We've also heard from Chris Paulson in this segment. She's CEO of Indiana Youth Group. And we also have Chris Hanberg, executive director of Indy Pride, and Julie Walsh, founder and executive director of Gender Nexus, with us to talk about a new report on the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis. And Dustin, how do you get around those obstacles of representation? Is it just about how it's done?
Partially. So obviously you can have what we call directed efforts, right? So people going into those communities, reaching out to the organizations that serve those communities is absolutely one way. For instance, it's great that Julie's a part of our team and has Gender Nexus so that we can reach out to the transgender and non-binary populations. We're obviously missing a lot of populations, even within our 700 participants. So directed efforts is a great way. And then also we look at things like focus groups. So even if we can't get, say, 700 more participants that identify as a minority group, we can make smaller focus groups where we get people at a round table. Obviously, given the COVID restrictions, we're not going to be implementing that right now, but maybe in a few months we can get people at a round table or over Zoom. And we're actually getting more of a perspective, a full story from these people and what they're experiencing. So it goes beyond just, you know, the numbers and the data. It's actually, it's a story.
Chris Hanberg, part of the goal of survey reports like this one is to gather information, of course. Can you talk about what your goal is now? What impact do you hope this data is going to have?
Well, I hope that this data will enable us that have been working around these issues to focus in on what solutions that we can offer, what are some goals we'd like to reach, and then approach different organizations and funding sources so that we can start to really make a dent in some of the issues that our community is facing.
And I keep hearing about this community center. Is there a detailed idea of what that center might look like from people who've been talking about it? What's the ideal result? Do you point to existing centers as an example of what the one in Indianapolis may end up looking like? Should we get it?
I think that there's a dream that a lot of us have of what this community center could look like. And it's something that we've been talking about in the Indianapolis community for years and years and years, of a place that could be a social hub where folks could meet each other, a place where resources such as mental health resources or addiction resources or identifying primary care providers would be in the same place. It's just the sky's the limit. And so we're talking about this, hoping that we can continue to move the conversation forward, because we are a very large city that does not have an LGBTQ center. And so we look at places like Chicago and LA and around the country, and we might be just a little bit envious of the work that they're able to do by having a central location. So I think it's a hope. It's definitely something that we're all talking about working on, but there's no plans in place right now that I'm aware of, other than abstractly. So,
Dustin and Julie, I'd like for you to respond to Megan's question on Twitter. She says, I'm the director of Transgender Resource Education and Enrichment Services in South Bend. To the panel, do you feel these results would be able to be overlaid throughout Indiana? Dustin, are we looking, do these results reflect central Indiana only, would you say, or do you think that it could be a representation of the entire state?
It's a very good question. You do obviously want to be very cautious whenever you're, we call it extrapolation, whenever you're extending the results to another population, right? You do want to be cautious because you don't want to underrepresent, you don't want to overrepresent statistics on another subpopulation or another group that actually didn't complete the data itself. It is a good question. I can tell you that our data is very, very similar to national data out there. So if you look at certain things like how many people identified that they've been diagnosed with depression, how many people have been diagnosed with anxiety, it is very similar to what you see with national data, national LGBTQ group data. So I do think that it's extendable to other people within Indiana. Will there be subtle sub-differences? Absolutely. I think the general picture, though, that unfortunately the LGBTQ community has a lot more higher disparities when we're talking about physical health, mental health, that is universal. You absolutely would see that in Northern Indiana, Southern Indiana, and across the entire state.
And Julie, would you say that representation in the trans and non-binary world is greater in central Indiana than the rest of the state? Or do you think that that's an assumption that someone who's not part of the community, myself, might make?
I appreciate Megan's comment on Twitter, and I would say that, you know, there are trans and non-binary folks all across the state of Indiana, and those stories may not be fully represented within this data, just in the sense that we're not hearing from those certain segments that Dustin had mentioned earlier, like our trans folks of color are underrepresented. People who are living in more rural areas are less represented. But also, as Dustin had mentioned, this data in general does represent the overall community needs. The mental health disparities still exist. The physical health disparities still exist. The poverty, the economic impact, all of these issues still exist regardless of where someone lives within the state of Indiana. So having some type of community center that would be established would really improve those key determinants of health that would elevate the LGBTQ plus community in general. So the health and healthcare, the economic stability, the social and community context, really increasing the viability of our neighborhoods and increasing the education. By addressing these areas, that center would decrease those health inequities, the under and unemployment, while increasing educational attainment and that social connectedness.
Julie Walsh and Chris Hanberg, I would like to get your answer to Chad's question on Twitter. Chad is wondering if groups here do outreach work to places outside of Indianapolis. Chris, we'll start with you. Chris Hanberg.
So for Indy Pride, I know that we have made the shift to virtual for a lot of our events, and so anyone is absolutely welcome to attend our virtual events. All of our typical events that would take place not during a pandemic are open to everyone, but we don't specifically target to those outside of central Indiana. The great thing about Indiana, however, is that we have seen so many prides popping up in the most unexpected places. And so Richmond, Indiana has a pride. Kokomo has a pride. Columbus, Indiana has a pride. And so what we do at Indy Pride is try to connect all of those regional and small prides together so that we can talk about what's going on and find ways to outreach with each other. And we meet about once a quarter. And so that's probably the best that we come to doing outreach.
And Julie Walsh, would you say Gender Nexus has outreach, or do you do most of the people you work with come to you?
We do outreach across the state as well. I think most of the organizations that are serving our populations have done a fantastic job, particularly amidst the pandemic. IOIG has some amazing services that they've established for youth. Gender Nexus has shifted our group programming online and continue, as always, to offer one-on-one services virtually. And so these are really ways that folks can remain connected regardless of where they are across the state of Indiana.
There's a lot more to talk about. We'll keep the conversation going after a quick break. We're talking with experts and advocates behind a new report on the LGBTQ plus community. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis. We're joined by four guests on Skype. Chris Hanberg is executive director of Indy Pride. Julie Walsh is founder and executive of Gender Nexus, executive director of Gender Nexus. Dustin Nowoski is founder and president of OutCare. And Chris Paulson is CEO of Indiana Youth Group. And Chris Paulson, we're going to start with you in this segment. Ignoring where we are in the country for a moment, why is a physical space like a community center important for members of these communities, I guess, in general?
A community center would just give us a place to gather, a place for services to be centered, kind of a one-stop shop for community members, just to go and hang out, be social, network. Networking is really important, especially in a Midwest town. And right now, the LGBTQ community really doesn't have a place to meet and network. So it would be important in a number of different manners.
Have things changed in Indianapolis in recent years with respect to the community having places to gather?
Definitely. You know, there used to be LGBTQ coffee shops, which have disappeared. You know, we're not advocating for people to meet in bars, not that there's anything wrong with bars, but the number of LGBTQ bars are dwindling. So just a safe space for people to meet is very important, and those are going away. Now, I think a lot of the hetero cisgender community might think that LGBTQ people don't need this anymore because we have, you know, now protections in employment and there's same-sex marriage, but that's not true. There's still discrimination that happens all the time, and LGBTQ people just need a place that they can feel safe to grow and flourish.
Had you been to those coffee shops that used to exist? What was that space like?
Yeah, years ago, there were on Mass Avenue before it was gentrified, there were coffee shops that existed, and you know, it was great to have a safe space. You know, this is 20 years ago when it wasn't safe at all to be out anywhere in Indianapolis. So it's places like those is what we need again, so people can feel safe.
Dustin, you talked earlier about the fact that, you know, there are bars, of course, as part of the community gathering network, I suppose. But you talked about that being problematic. Why did you use that word?
Yeah, it's a good question. I use that not, again, as Chris said, not to attack the bars in any way.
Of course.
But as a psychiatrist, and I'm sure Julie can comment on this as well, we do know that historically bars have been an area for people to feel safe in the LGBTQ community to congregate, to hear one another's stories. That can be quite empowering. What we do know, though, is because of the setting, unfortunately, a lot of people can pick up substances and ultimately lead to substance use disorders. We do know what shows in our survey and across national data that the LGBTQ community, unfortunately, has a much higher prevalence of universally every substance across the board. And so it can be problematic for certain individuals within the LGBTQ community to pick up on those substances or have an exacerbation in their substance use disorder.
Dustin, let's get into some more of the purposes behind what this community center might look like. And part of the idea is about referring to people to service providers who can help them with a variety of issues. What is that experience like right now with the absence of this possible community center for someone in the LGBTQ plus community? How hard is it for them to find that kind of information?
Well, I would say it's easier now that all of our organizations are communicating with one another. And after founding OutCare Health, that was one of the biggest things that I focused on when I founded OutCare, because doing research, I realized that the only list out there about culturally competent providers, it was either word of mouth, so within the community, or they were blogs online. Looking back on it, that would have been 2014. The only things I could find were from like 2008, 2010. Those were outdated. And so even now, we have an extensive directory of culturally competent providers across the country, a lot of them here in Indianapolis and across the state of Indiana. That's essentially our main goals as a huge referral source, and knowing those providers and knowing who's great and how to refer them. And the other LGBTQ organizations utilize this service as a referral source, but it's still hard. We do know that while it's great that there are great providers out there, it's not the norm. There are a lot of providers that still need a lot more education. There are many providers here in Indianapolis that I think at heart are very liberal, but they don't have the experience and they don't have the education. And unfortunately, those biases come out, those microaggressions come out, and it only further makes the disparities that the LGBTQ population face and makes it worse. Mm.
Julie Walsh, have things changed at all for transgender and non-binary people in Indianapolis in recent years?
I think we've definitely seen some improvements in ability to connect with those culturally competent providers that Dustin was talking about, not only through word of mouth, but when our organizations do have a sense of how to more effectively refer people to providers that match the needs that they're looking for. We have more providers who are offering care when it comes to mental health services and for physical health needs. However, there's still a drastic shortage for folks, and we need to be able to have that education for providers so that it doesn't become a unique specialty where just certain providers can offer services to trans and non-binary folks. But for just general practitioners and mental health counselors to feel more comfortable and to understand some of those nuances of the needs of community simply by educating themselves. And so we're hoping that we can continue to increase that educational understanding and awareness among community providers.
Is there an openness among the community providers, would you say, overall, to learning about this and learning the best practices?
I think Dustin might be able to speak to this. I think there's certainly some resistance in some communities, just because there's not a lot of educational components about LGBTQ plus specific needs that are embedded within educational programs. And until that happens, I think some of that training that comes post-schooling is met sometimes with some of that resistance. And so it really does require some personal desire to learn about the needs of the community.
Dustin Nowoski, any follow-up there?
Yeah, I'm sure I could talk about this for weeks, but I will say that in general, I think that a lot of providers superficially will not tell you that they don't need a training. I think it's 2020, right? I think if you said, I don't care to learn about the LGBT community, you'll lose a lot of patients, if not your job. I do think, though, that as Julie was saying, taking that a step further is the barrier that we see. I hear from many, many providers, I've been doing this for 40, 50 years. Why should I change now? I've never had a bad experience. I've never had an LGBTQ patient tell me that they were wronged. My response is, well, they probably didn't come back to you. And so that's essentially what's happening. Like I said earlier, and this goes beyond just the provider level. We know that there's discrimination even at the front desk. For people that are managing calls, setting up appointments. Unfortunately, it has permeated the entire healthcare community. Again, I think that a lot of providers, they need an expert. They need someone who's been doing this for quite some time to point out those subtle microaggressions that a lot of providers do have. The biggest step, especially when we lead trainings throughout Care Health and when I'm educating medical students and peers and colleagues, awareness can go a long way. And until someone points something out that you're saying wrong about the community or even, you know, indirectly or directly, they're not going to know otherwise.
Today, we're talking about the LGBTQ plus community in Indianapolis and also talking about the results of a new report on the community. And we are with Dustin Nowoski, founder and president of OutCare. Chris Paulson is also with us, CEO of Indiana Youth Group. Julie Walsh is founder and executive director of Gender Nexus. And Chris Hanberg is executive director of Indie Pride. Chris Hanberg, we're talking about a community that's already had issues feeling connected with each other in this city. And I have to assume that the pandemic has amplified that problem to a degree. But we've also heard stories from communities that, in a weird way, this has pushed people to engage more with their community. Have you noticed anything like that? What effect has this last few months had?
It has been certainly a difficult and strange time for everyone. And I think that it has, in a sense, brought people together in that we can focus on the things that are important. And I really think the protest movement that we're seeing from Black Lives Matter surrounding police brutality is part of that, as that people are really focused on what are the important things in society. And so we're really focused on trying to make those things more relevant in our lives. And I think the same goes for community in general, that we are intentionally reaching out to people that we might not have talked to in a long time. And we're intentionally seeking out meaningful relationships rather than shallow ones. So I think that it's a mix of good and bad.
Do you think that some of that same messaging that is happening around Black Lives Matter can be applied or maybe appropriated toward what we're talking about today, or would that be inappropriate?
I think that would be inappropriate. The message of the Black Lives Matter movement is there are people in the community that intersect that are both LGBTQ and also part of the Black Lives Matter movement, but and who are Black and they're people of color, but I don't want to appropriate their protest movement or the messages that they're sending out now.
Chris Paulson, I guess I'm curious about your perspective too. Has the pandemic done damage to some of the momentum behind efforts like this, or are people figuring out how to work through it?
I think, like Chris Hanberg said, it's both. At IYG, it has actually expanded the number of youth we can reach by going online. You know, we've added more than 75 youth in the last 2 months to our programming that otherwise would not have been able to reach IYG. But it's also been very difficult for a number of our youth to lose that safe space, a place that they can come and get food and know that they are accepted for who they are. And who they're becoming. And they can go on that journey without judgment in our space. And they have lost that. Some of them are not safe to be home, to be out at home. You know, so they have to hide who they truly are. And that takes a big toll on your mental health. So I think it's both. It's been positive and it's in the same manner been negative.
Julie Walsh, a week ago today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act protects gay, lesbian, and transgender employees from discrimination based on sex. What did you think when you saw that happen?
I think this is some incredible news that's far overdue in its interpretation. I think it is going to go a long way, particularly for folks in Indiana, because we have not had any protections in the state of Indiana for our LGBTQ plus community members who could be fired simply for being who they are. So this ruling really affirms who folks are and that we should be able to be employed. We should be, we'll take it a step further, people should be housed. People should be treated in healthcare and other settings as any other person should be, that we should not be discriminated against or oppressed simply for being who we are.
Chris Hanberg, let's come back to the survey. Who are some of the people and groups that you hope to get this new survey data in front of?
I think primarily we want to use this to support our efforts to find and seek funding for a community center and bolster our own budgets that in those organizations that serve vulnerable populations. So I really hope that with all of the media attention that those that have means and those that do fund can see this as an opportunity to do a lot of good in the community.
Chris, Holly on Twitter wants to know where she can read the report.
The report was sent out, and I think it's on the Damien Center's website. I know that a lot of us posted it through our social media feeds, but the Damien Center's website has it. So I believe that's damiencenter.org.
Chris, do you think that research like this could help sway lawmakers to support initiatives that they might not have otherwise? How far do these things seem to go, I guess, in convincing people like that to change their minds?
I'm going to kick that question over to Chris Paulson, who's had a lot more work, a lot more experience working with lawmakers than I have.
Yeah, Chris, what do you think?
I think the information is good. It's always great to get data in front of lawmakers. I think lawmakers are most moved, though, by personal stories. So teaming this data with the personal stories of their constituents, I think, is very important.
What's that struggle going to look like, knowing what you know about the Indiana legislature? Do you think it's going to be difficult, or do you think that with this new information, it could be a little easier?
I think education is always difficult, but we'll be there advocating for the LGBTQ plus community. And every year, more and more people reach out and want to learn and want to be educated. So I think we are incrementally moving in a positive direction.
Dustin, in our last minute, what new research would you like to see done on this?
Yeah, good question. I think that we absolutely can expand this survey to get more LGBTQ Hoosiers, absolutely. Going back to what we said initially, we absolutely need to be getting more participants in those minority groups, especially trans women of color. We don't have enough data on that. Actually, universally, we don't have enough data really across the entire country. We definitely can take this a step further and reach out to those groups and get the data that we need.
I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time to talk with us today about this. Chris Hanberg is Executive Director of Indy Pride. Chris, thank you so much. Julie Walsh is Founder and Executive Director of Gender Nexus. Julie, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having us today.
Dustin Nowoski is founder and president of OutCare. Thank you, Dustin.
Thanks for having us.
Chris Paulson is CEO of Indiana Youth Group. Thanks to you, Chris.
Thanks for the conversation.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. We are on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. And I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.